Hello, everyone. This is Mike Quincy connecting the light. My guest today is Dawn Henderson. We're going to mainly talk about her latest book, which is called Star Speak, which is about messages of ascension, love, contact, and, as she says, more in the words of our star brothers and sisters. She also has a novel out, which is called Lost Legacy, a novel in the form of information about the crystal skulls, which we would also like to talk about a little bit later in the programme. So I think both subjects are going to be of some interest. So welcome to the programme, Dawn.
Thank you very much, Mike.
You're very welcome. Now, our listeners obviously wouldn't know that you were a guest at the Sedona Conference, the 2012 Ascension Conference, and I'm sure they might be interested just to hear a few words from you as to what you thought about it, because although I've circulated my own sort of little write-up on it, I don't know that they've necessarily heard about it from anyone else. So would you like to tell them what your impression was of the conference?
Absolutely. Interesting. I didn't know what I was getting into because, to be honest, I was given the link from a friend in England after another conference that I was going to attend was cancelled, so I went to it on the spur of the moment, totally blind, and found it immensely interesting. There were a lot of things, a lot of different subjects came up, everything from forgiveness to how we're spreading the word to channelings from various star beings and archangels, which was rather fascinating. I mean, that fascinated me the most because that's what I do. A lot of things that I hadn't come across before, a few things that contradicted the messages that I've been receiving, but that's, you know, that's the way it is. Everybody receives something slightly different, and I think that gives us all a really good full picture rather than just being taken down one path of interest all the time. I think the thing that struck me most about the conference was the open-heartedness of everybody there, just the pure love that was in the room. It was overwhelming at times, both from the speakers such as yourself and from everybody who was attending.
Yeah, fine now. You stayed for a longer period in Sedona. What did you think of Sedona as a place? Because it has a very very good reputation for being very magical in the sense that it's attracted a lot of psychic groups and things of that nature into Sedona itself.
I found it an absolutely amazing place. I mean, visually, the place is glorious. You have the beautiful deep brick red rocks against this incredibly blue sky, a sky I've never seen anything that blue. With the desert, but not total desert. You know, there's a lot of green around as well. So visually, it's absolutely mind-blowing. And energetically, I felt it was just the same. Everybody there seemed to be even more welcoming and generous and open-hearted than the rest of the places in America that I've visited. The real buzzy, light, fizzy energy. I had the pleasure and the honour and the fortune to be there nearly 6 weeks, and it was amazing. It was absolutely stunning walking around, sensing the vortex sites and the energy there, which is, you know, very, very tangible in certain places. And the whole experience for me was absolutely amazing. I loved it, and I would love to go back at some point.
Indeed, yes. That would be a very attractive proposition for me as well.
Absolutely,
I think.
Yes.
I would like to have had the opportunity to actually look around Sedona a little bit more, but the conference was a busy time, and in the end we didn't really get the opportunity to do very much sort of touring around there. But the different journeys we took between hotels, and I came in from Phoenix Airport to Cottonwood originally, so I had to do a trip at the right time from there up to Sedona. And of course, driving through that part of the country for about best part of an hour, I think it was, some of the sites were wonderful, and particularly as you approach Sedona itself with what I tend to call its own little Grand Canyon there.
Yeah. Well, maybe next time, Mike, you'll be able to spend a bit longer and actually really get out into the countryside and the desert around.
I hope so, yes. I was fortunate enough to be invited to the domed houses, or house, I suppose I should call it, although it's got about five domes, at Xanadu, and that was certainly very interesting as well. So it wasn't all work, and that was quite a privilege to be invited there.
Yes.
Now, let's just come to your book, Star Speak. It's obviously channeled messages. Now, how did that all start with you? When did you first sort of have a contact or realise that you could do that type of work?
It's been quite new to me, actually, Mike. My previous book, I published a book back in September 2010, which, looking back on it, I now realise a lot of the information came from somewhere other than me, although I didn't necessarily realise at the time. But the big time channeling, if you like, the conscious channeling, I've only been doing it about 18 months. The star beings and the crystal skulls came into my life with a great big explosion June, July last year, so 2011. I connected with them initially going on meditation journeys and crystal layouts, or within crystal layouts, within crystal grids, that a friend of mine took me on. And the first time I did that, I actually met with some Pleiadian light beings, which I didn't know what they were. I really didn't know. I came across these beautiful, tall, golden beings, had a little conversation with them, came back from the meditation, and it was only then that I realized who I'd been in contact with. Then I started linking into some crystal skulls, the original crystal skulls, the one that sort of placed in the earth 250,000 years ago, which I've written about in my Lost Legacy book. And it really built from there. Initially, much of the channeling that I was getting was linked into the writing of that book. But as that went on, so the messages were coming more and more directly from the star beings, relating to what was going on in the world at large or to various things that were helpful to me. And they were verbally channeled, a lot of them. I was working with my friend Sue Coulson. We worked together once a week doing channelings, taking each other on meditation journeys to meet these beings with the skulls, and verbally channeling or describing our journeys, various things. So we would each transcribe our own journeys and our own messages that we channeled after that. So I was getting quite a good collection of them, and then started channeling through the skulls, channeling the light beings through the skulls, which are my main source. So I have this whole range of material, and it was only when I was in Sedona, I've been in Sedona about 3 weeks trying to write the sequel to Lost Legacy, and I just had a very clear message, come on, put that aside, get your messages out, you know, now's the time, it's a really important time.
Yeah.
We're coming up to this big, huge, momentous date. We want you to share what you've got, get it out. And because I already had all the material, I managed to put it together within about a week or 10 days. And there it was. It was on Kindle by the time I'd left the US. And a couple of weeks later, it's come out in paperback.
Oh, wonderful. That is certainly quick work.
Yeah.
It's funny that you should have got, I suppose, a telepathic message sort of asking you, or geeing you up, as it were, to get the messages out, because a very similar thing happened to me when I first was asked to do channeling by Saint Germain through Nancy Tate, who is a good medium in her own right, and also a channeler, of course. And I was in some degree of hesitation at the start because I wasn't quite sure how to sort of tackle it. And I was a little bit apprehensive, and it took me a little while to get going. And then I was sitting at my computer one morning, and I distinctly heard a voice in my head say, something to the effect, "Hey, how about me?" or something like that. And I realised I was being reminded that I'd been asked to do it. So, of course, I just went ahead then and thought, OK, you can't sort of hang around too long. Just get on with it and see what happens. So once you're sort of committed to it, and I guess we must have made an agreement to do this before we came into our life,
yeah.
They certainly make sure that you, you know, you get on with it. So
yeah.
When did you actually really start? And are you saying this goes back to June, July last year?
Yes. Some of the messages in Starspeak do date back to that. The majority of them are probably from about November onwards last year through to the summer, perhaps August of this year. But the majority of them, certainly, and the direct channel messages that I sort of speak and record and then transcribe into the written word.
Right. I mean, do the are you just in contact with one particular person, or is it a number of them, or don't you actually know, for example?
It's a number. I channel the star beings through my crystal skulls, both of which are individual star beings. The skulls are linked to individual star beings.
Yeah.
But they do allow other people to speak through them. And certainly yeah. My, what I call my main skull, my main star guide, Sirius Ra, he has told me that he acts as gatekeeper, so that if anybody wants to speak through to me through him, he watches that their energy is right, that they're not a negative energy coming through, and allows them then to use his skull or him as the channel, if you like, to channel through me.
Yeah.
But I've had so many different. I've spoken to Lady Isis on occasion. Ra. I have a guy called Kaluka, who's a star being, who actually I don't always channel through the skulls, but very often he does come through because it's easier. And there, every now and again, you know, there are just so many star beings out there that want to communicate with us. It almost feels like they're queuing up saying, no, it was you last time. Come on, get out the way. I will never go this time. I want to say something. And sometimes it really does feel like that.
Yeah. I mean, in mentioning, like, Egyptian contacts, I suppose that explains your interest in Egypt itself, which is something I've already had, although I can't claim to have had contacts with Egyptian entities. But does that suggest that perhaps you've had a lifetime in Egypt before? I mean, are you aware of that?
I have a sense that that's true. I've never done a regression or anything to prove that. I have a sense it's true. But my feeling also is that very many of the people who are working in this way at this time have very strong connections to Egypt. I speak to a lot of people, like a lot of light workers, a lot of channels in the physical world at this moment, who are very, very strongly drawn to Egypt. And I just have a sense that there is a reason for that, and that is because Egypt was a very important spiritual place, and a lot of us have got those links and are now bringing them forward.
Yes. I think the mysterious part of Egypt for me really is the period going way, way back, even way before the pharaohs, when the, should we call it colony, because it was at one time a colony of Atlantis, was set up just before the final collapse of Atlantis. But it's a period that there is very little record of. And I think when they first set it up, it must have been an exceptionally spiritual place. It seems that a lot of its history is lost somewhere, but I think it tended to deteriorate in the latter stages. So I think you're right to say it is a spiritual place, but I think that aspect of it goes back a very long, long time, and maybe in the very near future we will learn the truth about the history, because I'm sure it would be fascinating. That the pyramids at the Giza complex were generators of energy of some kind. And I saw a program just recently on television suggesting that they use that energy for lighting, because there's always been this question over how did they manage to work inside these caves and underground tombs without adequate lighting, because you can imagine them sort of using just natural resources like fire of some description, and yet in none of the tombs is there any evidence of that type of lighting being used, you know, flame with smoke and that sort of thing. So it's a very interesting question, but I think the energy is still actually, although depleted, still comes out of the top of the pyramids, even although the capstone is missing. So is the history of Egypt something you've actually gone into yourself?
It's not anything I've gone into that I've done physical research on it. I have taken myself back there and been taken back to various points in its history way before the time when the pyramids were supposed to have been built, because my very firm belief is that the whole of those ancient monuments in Egypt are much, much older than they're given credit for by the archaeologists. I've been taken back in meditation journeys and things like that and seen star beings there, and seen a lot of technology that we don't know about today being used. And, you know, when you say about the pyramids being power generators, absolutely, you know, I'll agree totally on that. But, you know, so much more power than just needed for lighting. Immense power generators, possibly, you know, sending it out way across the galaxy.
That's very interesting. Yes, I'm not surprised that that it created or gave out a tremendous power. I mean, the Giza Pyramid is a massive structure, and one can't imagine that it only gave out a very limited amount of energy. When you said you like looked back and saw ETs there, etc., did you get a feeling of what time period that was? Or was it, presumably it must have been earlier than the Pharaoh period.
Yeah, I didn't get a definite period, but the sense was that we were talking 10, 15,000 years ago, rather than perhaps the 3 or 4 that is the standardly recognised historical period that the pyramids and the pharaohs are put in. Definitely pre-Pharaoh as we know it.
Really that interesting. Tend to make sense to me, that sort of time period, because I think when people have made genuine attempts to date, say, the Sphinx, for example, that goes back some 10,000 years or more. It was built long, long before the historical dates that they give. And since it was a colony of Atlantis at one time, you have to think, as you said, it probably goes back 10 to 15,000 years. So there's a lot of history there that we're unaware of. Fine, now, but let's come back to your book, Stars Speak, and your channeling. Yeah. Did it follow, the messages this is, did they follow any particular line of information? I mean, did you get an idea of what they were trying to convey to you, or was it sort of random messages?
It varied. Working with Sue was brilliant, because at various points, you know, we actually asked, questions. So she would ask me questions when I was channeling and vice versa. So if she had, say, had a particular interest, or there was something that I specifically wanted to understand a bit clearer, then we would ask the questions for the answers. They didn't always answer, I have to say. You know, they're very clear that, but you don't need to bother with that, because that's not your remit, sort of thing. So they would answer within the framework of, yes, well, this is what you need to know. But actually, somebody else needs to know that stuff. Don't worry yourself. You know, that's information overload, really. If you think about that as well, it's irrelevant to you, personally. Not irrelevant to the world, obviously, but irrelevant to you. There's other people channeling that stuff. Very often I would ask questions if I was doing it on my own. I would ask questions about, you know, most of the time, very simply, what are the messages that you feel are most important for you to share with us at the moment? So they never particularly focused on specifics in any way, but so many of the messages did follow the same, like, they've all got the same basic message. The message is, we are moving into this period where everything is going to change. We're not going to recognize our world in a few years' time. We need to learn to open our hearts, live as one. All the spiritual messages that have been handed down over the millennia, that's the messages they want to come across, because that is what is important for us at the moment, and that is what they're trying to share with us and want to teach us.
Right. Now, you actually mention in your little write-up that it contains messages of ascension. Did they speak specifically of this period we're going through now with the 12-12, and of course 12-21 or 21-12, whatever way around you want to look at it, coming up within a matter of days?
They talk about ascension. They don't give specific dates, and they have never given me specific dates, because their message to me is that this is when it will happen, but this is not the date where everything will change. It is a process. It's been changing, moving up to that point. It will change following on to that point. And you will not necessarily see any difference between the 21st of December and the 22nd of December. They're saying, you know, it's like the tipping point, like on a seesaw. So if the seesaw was tipped one way, at the 21st of December, it will just gradually start to tip the other way. And everything will begin to change, and it will get faster and faster and faster. And there's no going back. But there won't necessarily be anything very, very clear, visible or momentous actually happening on that date. Now, I know other people say other things, and, you know, we all work with the information we're given.
Yes, I can tend to go along with that, in the sense that, of course, the biggest thing with ascension is personal to everyone, where they're level of consciousness is concerned. What we're looking at is people, you and I and everybody else, being prepared for a change of frequency. That is, I think, the correct interpretation of what is happening. In other words, when Mother Earth moves into that new frequency with us, then it will allow these changes for the betterment of humankind to start taking place, but it will also put a stop to the dark energies as well. So I think you're right. We might not visibly see a lot different, but of course a lot will have clearly happened. I mean, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would. I mean, obviously a lot's going to be happening on an energetic level, and it'll just take time to filter through to the physical, like any changes. Any energetic changes tend to take their time to filter through. Sometimes they can happen instantaneously, but more often than not, it does take a little while. And I think that's a good thing, because I think, you know, if we suddenly woke up on December the 22nd and the world was in a different place and everything was different, can you imagine what the reaction of those people on the surface of the world will be who you know, are unaware of what's going on? It would be absolute mayhem. So, you know, it's a good thing that's happening in that way, in my opinion.
Well, yes, I think so, because there are, if you like, a lot of repercussions that are likely to have occurred if there were major changes on a big scale. I don't think you can do that with so many people involved. But the good thing is, of course, from the 21st, we do then know that we can expect things, as you said, to speed up. And the different changes that our ET friends are going to be involved in, as I see it, can then commence. We can get rid of a lot of what I would call the rubbish which we have been left with through our time in the third dimension. And we can start benefiting from all the new technologies and the advancements which we, to my mind, should have had many, many years ago, which, of course, have been blocked by the Illuminati. So I think those of us that are aware are very much looking forward to this period of time. And of course, with 12-12, that has been the start of the changes within each person, which begs the question, really, how did you get on? Did you find anything of any note that sort of happened to you?
I had the good fortune of being at Avery's own circle on the 12th of the 12th for a gong ceremony, which was amazing. But I think the most important things that I felt were when I was actually on my own out amongst the stones, and there were two very clear images that came to me when I was tuning into the energy. Yeah. One was that the brakes were now off. You know, everything that had been holding us back had now been released. And it was as if just everything was just waiting to hurtle forward. We were in that split second before everything hurtled forward into this new beginning, this new age, whatever you want to call it. That was the first thing. And it was very exciting because it was like, right, you're on your way now. You might not have made that move, but you're going.
Yeah.
The second really interesting thing was when I was at a pair of the stones, which I think are called the South Entrance or the Safe Stones, and I got a very clear image of energy rising up from the surface of the earth and spiraling into a DNA spiral. Now, I'm still trying to, I've got a vague idea of what that actually symbolizes, because obviously as we go into the light, everything's changing, our DNA is changing, the Earth's DNA is changing, so obviously that was part of it. I think there's more to it than that, but as yet I haven't got my finger on it, but I'm working on it.
Well, you certainly had a very interesting experience. I've only so far heard from about two or three different people, and each one's had quite a different experience. So as I am on air and I'm obviously speaking to you, I will tell you what happened to me. I had a nice quiet room to myself, and I sort of laid down rather than sitting in a chair, and obviously I prepared myself for whatever energies might come through, and I felt very relaxed, and I was putting out the message that I wanted to bring the energies down through my crown chakra so that I could ground them in myself and into the earth. And I did sense that a lovely sort of calmness came over me, and I felt very relaxed, very nice, and I was sort of absorbing this very nice feeling. And then I suddenly had the thought that I wonder if I could sort of get anything through my mind's eye, whether there was any image that might come to me. And what I saw was the face of a very heavily bearded man. And I was sort of looking at it in my mind's eye, and I thought, well, I don't know who that is. And then shortly afterwards, I suddenly thought, oh, I know who that might be, because not very long ago, I was given Socrates as one of my guides. Two different people confirmed that. And I thought, oh, that's possibly who it was, because I've seen a bust of Socrates, and he is a very full bearded man, sort of very wavy beard and that sort of thing. So I didn't know the significance of that. Anyway, I sort of still laid there relaxing, and then suddenly, almost with a jolt, I sort of sat up, and I had planned to do my meditation for 30 minutes because I started at 12 o'clock. And lo and behold, when I looked at the clock I had beside me, it was as good as exact 12:30, and I had no reason to know why I suddenly came to, as it were, at that time. But what was puzzling was I thought I'd only been laying there for about sort of 15, 20 minutes at the most. So somewhere time went without me having any real feeling or knowledge of what happened. So it's a little bit of a mystery. I don't know whether I went out of the body and didn't realise it or what happened, but that was my experience. So I spoke to my best friend, and he said that he didn't feel anything sort of dramatic, but like me, he felt very peaceful and it was a very nice feeling which remained with him when he finished. And one of the best ones I sort of heard was somebody who you will have seen and heard talk at the 2012 Sedona Ascension Conference was Steve Beckow. Now, yeah. I think he's collecting people's experiences, and very shortly he'll probably issue an email which he'll circulate, which will give people an idea of what happened. But he was in bed because of the time difference, and I'm not sure whether he was actually awake or whether he'd gone off to sleep. But anyway, he said he didn't sort of appear to have any particular feeling about it, but after he woke up at 6:30 in the morning, he said slowly but surely it seemed like he'd taken in all this energy and it was having an effect on him. And gradually, he said he sort of merged into a very blissful state of being. And I think the words he used was, he said it was almost as though I didn't care about anything else. It was so sort of nice and so relaxing for him. He sort of almost lost touch with anything else. And as far as I know, that carried on for a period of time, and I don't know whether it necessarily stopped, but I thought, well, that was interesting. That's another angle there, that he evidently took the energies in, but they didn't, as it were, show themselves until he woke up. So
yeah,
there we are. That's a few different ideas of how it affected people.
Yeah. I mean, I'd certainly agree with you, Mike, that it was so peaceful. The day was so still and peaceful. And there was that just like that blanket of stillness and everything. It seemed to be quite a general thing, I think.
Yeah. And I recall also one of our support ladies, as I call her, with the translation team, Beatrice Weir, she also had the experience of being full of this beautiful energy, and she said she felt so good with it, she wanted to go out and tell everybody she loved them. And so it just shows you the power of the energy at that time, and well, how beautiful it was. So it would be very interesting to see a few more accounts of what happened to other people. But of course, one has to say, I suppose, that the people who didn't know anything about it and therefore weren't prepared and didn't expect it probably didn't feel anything at all. Or if they did, they probably brushed it off as a sort of oddball experience. But you have to think, really, that everybody to some extent must have been affected by it.
I think everybody had to be affected by it. It was very, very strong energy, and whether people actually felt it and realised it or not, my personal view is I don't see how anybody could have not been affected on some deep level by it, even though it might not have shown up in their consciousness or their actions or anything else. But I don't see how they can not have been.
Yeah. I can't help wondering whether people perhaps that hold a lot of, say, negative energies, in fact, because of that input of light, might have actually found it difficult to handle. It may have even, to them, have had some sort of adverse effect. So it's an interesting situation. Anyway, we've gone through now the first stage of this process of ascension that we can really be aware of. And I think we're obviously all looking forward to the 21st of December. And who knows, the experience might be even more deeper and more memorable than the one before. But at least we are assured that it will take place. I mean, nothing is clearly going to stop the energy coming through on that day. I mean, it's a divine happening and it can't be stopped.
No, I mean, it's apart from anything else, it's a physical meeting up, if you like, of various points in the universe. You know, it's a galactic thing. It's not just an energetic thing. It's a physical thing happening. So, you know, for it not to happen, something massive would have to happen to the entire universe. So, yeah, I think we can be pretty sure that it's going to happen.
Absolutely, yes. It's been confirmed, as far as I can see, from a number of sources that our sun is, in fact, moving into a central point where it will line up with the great central sun, and it would appear that it is this actual alignment that is going to bring about this big, I call it a surge of energy. And I'm really, for myself, going by what Archangel Metatron said, and he said that this surge of energy would come through at precisely 11 minutes past 11. Now, right. I don't think everybody is going by that particular time, and maybe it doesn't really matter anyway, but
yeah.
That is what I shall use as my sort of level of understanding to get myself prepared for it.
Yeah.
So that's something good to look forward to. Now, I told you that I've always had an interest in the crystal skulls. It's not that I'm by any means an expert on them. I probably don't know a lot more than most people who take an interest in it. Having spoken of Archangel Metatron, he did say that on the 12th of the 12th, it was in fact the 13th skull, which is the most powerful one, called Max, that was actually powering those energies into the Earth, and that he described it as being our final coding for ascension. So that was interesting. Now, you told me that your novel was written without your knowledge of the other skulls. In other words, it's been, what should we say, inspired, but not yep. affected by any knowledge you might have had beforehand. So tell us how that came about.
In a very strange way, that surprised me more than anybody else, I think. That's exactly right, Mike. I mean, I knew nothing about crystal skulls. I knew they existed, didn't like them, didn't want anything to do with them, because the old programming about skulls and, you know, evil, death, Hollywood horror films, all that sort of stuff, really wasn't interested in finding out about them or anything else. And there was a couple of series of events that happened over May, June last year. One was a talk I went to at a local healing centre, following which I was lent the book, a book that the lady that gave the talk had written, and in it was a small chapter on crystal skulls. Well, it meant nothing to me at the time. I read the book, didn't particularly resonate with me, certainly didn't sort of resonate with the crystal skull bit, because it wasn't something I particularly wanted to read about. But that was really the beginning. And then went on a couple of meditation journeys with my friend Sue in the crystal grids that she does, and came with the light beings at one point. And the next one, I was introduced to a crystal skull and came out of that, didn't think much about it until about 3 days later, when I woke up in the morning with a very, very clear pull that I had to write a book about crystal skulls. And I'm thinking, what? You know, what's going on here? I don't know anything about the skulls. How could I write a book? They're telling me, put it as a novel. And of course, my big block has been, well, I can write books, but I can't write novels, because I'll never be able to keep the story alive. I haven't got that much imagination. But this was what came through very clearly. Started writing it. The stories were given to me through connecting with the skulls. I channeled the main storylines. You know, I put all the pretty bits, all the fancy writing on it. But the storylines came through very, very clearly and obviously what I was to write. And the book was finished within 6 months, which surprised me more than anybody else. But in all that time, and since, to be honest, because there's several books in the series, you know, there are 13 original crystal skulls. My first book covers two of them, so I've got at least five more books to write, if not six. Don't worry about what anybody else has said. Just listen to what the guidance you're getting. Don't allow yourself to be influenced by anybody else's thoughts or ideas or channeling to anything else. So I haven't. So all I know about crystal skulls is what they have told me. And I'm holding on to that because, you know, I haven't got a better source, to be honest. if I'm writing about crystal skulls, then surely the crystal skulls themselves are the best sort of source of information for me.
Yeah. Well, it happens quite often that spirit or contacts or extraterrestrials want information put out that way. I guess it, yeah, in some sense, is as a story rather than, if you like, a documentary. It makes more for easy reading. What is the theme of your book, Lost Legacy? I mean, what does it tell people that is interesting about the skulls?
It tells the history of the crystal skulls, when they were brought to Earth, and I've put my hand up and say a lot of it contradicts most of what, you know, the common belief about the history of the crystal skulls is. There were 13 crystal skulls brought to Earth 250,000 years ago by various races from the stars, brought to Earth to help us in our evolution, our awakening consciousness. Okay, so that's 13 crystal skulls, 13 star races, I've since heard is common knowledge. But what is coming through very, very strongly, and I've questioned it and I've asked it, is that none of these skulls have yet been discovered. So all the crystal skulls, even the ancient ones out there, they are not these original skulls. These original skulls still exist. They are still hidden within the earth, and they will not be brought forward until we are ready to be able to use their power and their wisdom and their information wisely. What came through very strongly when I asked at one point was, if they come forward now, you'll destroy yourselves. You are not ready. Even with the process you're going through at the end of the year, you are not ready. You have a long way to go before they can be brought together again. And that's, you know, that's my very, very strong belief. I feel it. I know it, that they are still there. They are hidden. They are linked into the Earth's crystal grid, because that is how they influence us, through that power grid that's infiltrating up through the Earth. But they are there, and they are hidden, and nobody has yet come into contact with them.
I think what your contacts are talking about are the special skulls that form the links around the Earth, and they are powered up when they are all there as a complete set, if that's the right word to use, when there is immense power coming from them. And possibly the ones that we mainly talk about are simply, I wouldn't say copies, but they are skulls that appear to be mainly made of quartz, and they do carry and give out energies. And like the Hedges skull, I think that's being used almost like an oracle. You can sort of look into that, and you can ask questions and get answers. And the Max skull, which I mentioned, which is supposed to be the most powerful of the known ones, is actually a form of computer. And we were told, I think, by Archangel Metatron that it contains, this is Max, all the known knowledge of the universe within it. I say that in the terms that it clearly is some form of like a computer. So the whole subject of the skulls is obviously extremely interesting. It does make you wonder that when they had the original ones, what they actually used them for. Now, does that come up in your book? Do they tell you how they were used?
Well, the original ones were placed in the earth when we were in our infancy as human beings to help us develop our consciousness, but doing it at a distance. At various points, they have been brought into contact with the human race when the star beings felt that it was right, but individually in small groups, they were never brought together, and they were very, very carefully monitored. And at all those points, and you know, this includes Atlantis. They were all brought together at Atlantis, and look what happened. So they were very carefully monitored, and certainly pre-Atlantean times, when it was seen that they were being either misused or that there was a danger to the continuance of our species, if you like, because they had the power, if they were misused, you know, people would have the power to completely annihilate the human race. they were then actually taken back and rehidden. And they were only brought together as a whole, as a 13 whole in Atlantis, when it was believed that we were of a consciousness that we would actually use them wisely. They didn't get it quite right, but, you know, that's why they're not coming back together again. They do not want that situation to occur again.
Mm.
And when I say they...
I can understand that, and, well, we only have to look around and see what's been going on the Earth up to now to realise that we, as a civilization, are far from being ready to handle anything with such potent power as is suggested by all your comments and, of course, others.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Do they tell you where the skulls were made? I mean, presumably they were made off the Earth, off planet somewhere, with techniques or methods that we obviously couldn't replicate.
Yeah, they were made, according to the information I've received, there were 13 different very advanced star races, there were 12 very advanced star races who each created a skull. Now, when I say crystal skulls, I don't mean quartz. These skulls have been shown to me very clearly of different forms of minerals. So the ones that I talk about in Lost Legacy are a black obsidian and a blue obsidian. They have told me which the crystals are or the minerals are that they're made of, and I do know that. They were made in these planets. They were created in these by these races, and then the 13th, the master, because it was so powerful and so important, they actually came together as a whole and created it together, and then they brought them to Earth.
Yes. I certainly know where Max is concerned, that it's been very, very closely examined by under sort of new technology using a form of microscope, and they can't find any marks in the skull or on the surface that would suggest that it had been formed by any form of machinery. In other words, the surface of it is completely unmarked and pure, whereas, of course, some of the other skulls, which are copies, as good as they are, sort of cleaned up and look as though they're unmarked, when they're closely examined, you can see sort of machine marks or others in it where they've been cleaned up. So, yes, it does suggest that Max certainly was made off-planet and brought here at some time.
Well, I think what we've got to remember, Mike, is that these star beings have the technology, and that is certainly a possibility. The other possibility is the original 13 crystal skulls are present in Atlantis. We know Atlantean technology was far advanced in many ways to what we have today. And,
yes,
you know, they may well have come from Atlantis. They may have been created in Atlantis. You know, so not off-world, but with technologies that we have, you know, could be completely lost to us today. There's always that as well.
Yes, you could well be right. I mean, Atlantis was at some stages at a very high spiritual peak, and it could have been the times, like you suggested, perhaps going back 50,000 years or something like that, when they were allowed to have these skulls and perhaps use them. But, of course, when the levels drop from the spiritual heights, no doubt the extraterrestrials quickly removed them to make sure that the power of them wasn't abused.
They were certainly taken away from Atlantis before those who wanted to misuse them got their hands on them. My information is that they were actually taken away by some of the Atlantean priests. But I'm pretty sure that they would have had some advance warning from the star beings of what was happening. I haven't actually got into that details of the stories yet as to how that happened, but you know, I'm sure that would have been the case.
Yeah, so that is in fact the case. My reference to a lot of things that happened in Atlantis, particularly at the end where it started to break up, is largely related to the readings that Edgar Cayce gave. I was researching the subject some sort of 50 years ago or so, and his readings I found at that time were extremely helpful, because it wasn't the only place you could learn about Atlantis, but his readings you could more or less assume were accurate. And he also spoke about the other civilization at that time, Lemuria. But he did give you a lot of interesting information. And apparently in the end of time there, they did abuse the power they had, and they overused it, and they caused things to happen within the Earth that had a sort of knock-on effect, and it destroyed Atlantis, and of course it sunk.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's funny the way... Well, not funny, interesting the way we experience things, because having destroyed ourselves almost completely because of what happened in the Atlantean times, we then started this current cycle and were given another opportunity to see if we could go through it and sort of learn our lessons. But you're quite right, they were told it, or the people of the light energy were told in advance. And it was, in fact, according to my understanding, some of those that emigrated to Egypt and started the new civilization some 10 to 12,000 years ago. And one of those was Ra, the high priest, who seemed to be very much involved in setting that civilization up. So it's an interesting story when you can sort of find the facts.
Yeah, and that ties in very much with the information that I've been receiving over the last few days about Egypt and these skulls in Egypt. I don't know Edgar Cayce. I haven't read him. Again, I've been told not to do any research other than what I've given, so I don't know what he said about Atlantis. I just going by, you know, the information I've been given about Atlantis from the star beings. But that ties in very, very nicely with a group of people leaving Atlantis to travel to Egypt with one of the crystal skulls.
Yes, indeed. Well, it's nice to know that your source confirms what he said.
Yeah.
I think Edgar Cayce is recognised as being a very truthful and reliable source. Of course, he gave all his readings in a state of trance. So someone was obviously speaking through him, like they do through you or anybody else. So you have to think, or hope anyway, that it's an accurate and reliable source, which I think in his case was, because it covered so many different subjects. And he was largely known, really, for handling people's wish to have a reading, because they wanted to know how to treat illnesses that they had. Because you have to remember, I mean, Cayce died, I think it was in 1944, so the period before that when they were using him, perhaps medical cures and such weren't very clever, but what he used to do was tell people how to use natural things that were available to effect a cure. So in his time, he was very useful to people.
Yeah.
In the near future, of course, we've got the Cities of Light, which presumably immediately after the 21st will then be given perhaps the okay to manifest themselves. But I guess you're aware that the first City of Light is in fact going to appear in Sedona.
I heard that when I was at the conference. I mean, my understanding of the Cities of Light is that they are actually the motherships that are going to appear, the motherships for the extraterrestrials or the star beings who are watching over the planet. And I honestly don't think that they will appear until we're ready to take them and to see them and to accept them. That's my personal take. You know, I know other people feel very differently on that. My view is that even in 6 months' time, maybe it would be very, very unlikely that they will show themselves. Because, again, the same sort of thing as if somebody woke up on the 22nd of December who was totally oblivious to everything that's going on and saw the world had changed. You know, if the world woke up and saw these cities of light or motherships or whatever you want to call them suddenly hovering over the planet when they were still in the state of being asleep, if you like, or not being aware of what's going on, that would cause absolute mayhem on the surface of the planet. And one thing that I know that the star beings I talk to have said time and time again is that we will not show ourselves until you are ready to accept us. We will we will not spread that fear and darkness on your planet again.
Yeah, I agree with you about that. They often use the term that they won't appear until it's safe, and they're not so much thinking of their own safety because they can look after themselves anyway.
Absolutely.
But they're thinking of what circumstances might be created for us, and it may be of some danger to ourselves if they are to appear. But the only thing that comes through my mind is since on the 21st, the frequency levels will obviously change. I think that makes it more likely that they could appear within a relatively short time, you know, a matter of months. Certainly the inference from the messages that Jeannie got from the City of Light, because he visited it very frequently, seemed to suggest that it's sort of imminent, but then, of course, we don't know. I mean, there is no time on their side, so they're not. I don't think they're very good at predicting times for us.
No, and the other possibility, of course, is that, you know, those of us who are aware of what's going on, we already have those raised levels. We see or we hear, you know, in my case, I hear much more than Joe Blobs in the street, possibly. So maybe it's just that some people will notice they're there, the ones who are ready.
Yeah.
Not to do anything about it, but just be aware of their presence more without anybody else seeing them. It's just a thought. I mean, that's just something that's just come to me now as I've been talking to you.
Yeah, the whole thing of these high points of ascension are very difficult sometimes to sort out because we're told on the one hand that we're creating our own timelines, and yet you hear of things that are coming up like the Cities of Light. I mean, I'm sure everybody would be absolutely delighted if they did. I can't believe that there would be anybody against them, but there are seem to be so many factors involved in what happens after the 21st. But one thing is for certain, it will be to our advantage and in our best interest.
Yeah, and I think the other thing for certain is that nobody knows. Until it happens, nobody knows.
Not precisely, no, I don't think they do. Although, having said that, so often you get spiritual messages where they say that they've actually seen the future and therefore they can sort of tell us what the situation is going to be. So it's a funny old setup sometimes. In our 3D existence and with our limitations, I think sometimes it's very difficult to put all these things together and really comprehend what it's all about. I mean, our minds just don't seem to stretch that far yet.
No, I agree with you.
Right, so just sort of moving on to something else I noticed on your website.
Yeah.
You apparently did an earlier book, was it? Your inspirational guide to spiritual growth and personal transformation called Forgotten Wings. Is that something you did before your other two books that we've been talking about?
Yes, that one was published in September 2010. I've been writing that one for 2 years, so you can imagine how amazed I was when I got Lost Legacy done in 6 months. yes, I was really, really, really thrilled with it. I still am. I'm very proud of it. It's a very simple, straightforward guide to remembering who we are, tuning into our souls. You know, all the things that everybody who's on this path probably knows, opening our hearts to love, living authentically, being our true self, forgiving, staying in the moment, living to enjoy ourselves, creating our realities, all those sort of things. And I'll put my hand up and be the first to say there's nothing new in the book, but I've pulled it all together according to my understanding of it and how it's affected my life and how I live my life according to what I've written in the book. And it's a very, in some ways, it's quite a personal journey. In other ways, it's a universal truth that everybody can benefit from.
Yes, yeah. Right, so did you use the phrase, it sort of helps people to remember who they are? Is that what you said?
I did, yes. I mean, if you think that we are all souls, spiritual beings having a physical experience.
Yeah.
This book is my purpose of the book was to remind people of how to live from the soul, because we all know what life's like. We come into this world, we're little babies, we're innocent, the world's our oyster, we remember who we are, and then we grow and we forget because life comes in and we get told all these things and all these messages, most of which are wrong about ourselves, and we just completely lose track of that pure soul that's within us and how that soul would live if we remembered. And it's just little reminders and showing people how they can take steps back to that being, that true spiritual being that they are inside.
Yes, I think that's very, very nice indeed. Because at any given time, if people are coming into their awareness for the first time, it would be very helpful if they had something like that to assist them in their development, because you can benefit from the path that other people have already gone down. I mean, you don't have to experience everything exactly yourself, so that sounds a very useful book indeed.
Yeah, and it's, you know, how many times I've got a very dear friend who keeps reminding me that I ought to keep reading it, because even those of us that have been walking this path, I mean, I've been walking the path now for 15, 16 years, we forget, we get sucked into the everyday sort of physical reality of our 3D, and we forget sometimes to step back and move back to who we really are. And, you know, it's a pretty good reminder to those of us who sometimes forget just how, you know, what we're forgetting, and that we perhaps need to look at it in a little different way and change things a little bit.
Yes, indeed. Now, I'm just going to ask you some general questions about your work now. Do you sort of do workshops, or do you go around giving talks, or are you somebody who just sort of sticks to the author side of your life?
Well, I love the author side of my life. I love my writing. That's my true passion. But up till now, I haven't given a lot of talks, but it's something I really enjoy doing. And I do the odd one here or there, and I thoroughly enjoy doing it. I love standing up and talking about my passion. And my passion isn't just the writing. It's the star beings, it's the skulls, it's everything we're going through. We're in such an incredible, amazing time, and I love to share that with people. So I love to talk. I don't do workshops, although that might come in the future. We'll see. I'm open to possibilities. I think at the moment we have to be fluid, go where we're guided, and allow ourselves to be open to switching paths or new opportunities whenever they come, because those opportunities are our guidance as to the best way forward for us.
Yes, it's a sort of funny time at the moment to start arranging things, I think, for next year, because I know our group wants to get together again, but I think there's an element here that you really want to see how things are going to start working out, because if you're not sort of sure maybe where to focus your energies on or what to do in your own line of work. So it's going to be a very interesting time. I mean, the first few weeks, you have to think to yourself, would be quite remarkable.
Yeah, I think the way that the energies are shifting and things are moving and changing so quickly at the moment, trying to plan anything is a challenge, and probably one that's not worth taking on at the moment. You know, maybe let things settle down a bit until we know what's happening. But, you know, That's my point of view, and I'm not planning anything at the moment. I'm just taking every day as it comes and living in the moment and seeing what appears.
Yes, yes. Well, this is the point that I was saying, that we don't really quite know how the setup is going to change, how it may affect us as individuals. So we wait to see what direction it goes into, but whatever it is, it's going to be all good stuff for us.
Absolutely.
Now, I think I've covered most of the subjects I wanted to talk to you about, but is there anything that comes to mind that you would like to mention that I may not sort of hit upon?
I just would like to say that I feel so blessed to be on this world at this time with everything that we're going through. I mean, this is a period that is unprecedented, that we're actually stepping into this new consciousness at this level. And we're moving into a whole new dimension. Nobody's been here before on the face of this planet. And it's an adventure and it's exciting. And I'm just so looking forward to seeing what happens next.
Yes, indeed. And one, of course, remembers that this is, for us, on the 21st of the 12th, going to be a unique experience, because we are told that this will be the first time that a civilization has actually ascended in their physical bodies. So the experience for us will be something quite exceptional, I feel, or certainly very special. Now, would you like to give our listeners your website address? And you might just tell us, in that case, if that's where they buy the books from or where they're available from.
Okay, well, if I can just repeat the names of the books. The first one I've written, The Guide to Spiritual Growth and Personal Transformation, is called Forgotten Wings. My novel about the crystal skulls is called Lost Legacy, and the channeled messages is called Starspeak. Now, all those books are available worldwide on Amazon and through Kindle. And if you're in the UK, you can also buy them through my website. Now, I have two websites. My main website is www.dawnhenderson.co.uk. And I have a website that is purely for the Skull Chronicles, the Crystal Skull books, a bit of a mainstream website, that one, which is www.theskullchronicles.com.
Right, you better repeat that one. The soul, what?
The skull, so that, THESKULLCHRONICLES, theskullchronicles.com.
Right, okay, fine. Great, I think that really sums it up now. It's very nice of you to come onto the programme. And your story is very interesting, but then I have to think to myself, I have so many guests on here, and I find that people's experiences are somewhat unique. They all seem to have different backgrounds. They came into their work sort of by different paths. But one thing that seems certain is that if you've come down here to do work for the light, you certainly get a lot of help and maybe at times a lot of pushes as well.
Well, I think if you've made that contract before you came, there is no way they're going to let you get away with not doing it, particularly at this moment in time. But thank you so much for having me.
It's in our interest as well, because if we've accepted a life plan where we're going to do certain work, I mean, I think if we, for any reason, didn't carry that out, we're going to be awfully disappointed afterwards when we find out that we sort of missed the chance, I think.
I think you're right.
But then hopefully, from an intuitive point of view, people know the direction they should be heading in, really. And most people, it seems to me, like myself even, had a lot of help. I mean, things have very conveniently sort of dropped into place, and people have come along that have given me a hand and a help, just at the right time. And when I look back, it's just amazing the way it's all fallen into place. I just wonder how they arrange it sometimes.
They've certainly got it sussed, that's for sure.
Yeah. And then, you know, as happened at the conference, we all somehow seem to be there and able to get there at the right time. And I think everybody there, speaking of our little group of speakers, certainly all felt that we already sort of knew one another. There was nothing strange about coming together. Immediately, we were just old friends, if you know what I mean. And I think the audience, which included you, seemed to just slot in the same way. It was just right from the word go. Everybody was sort of one, I think.
Yeah, I think there's a definite recognition now of like-minded beings, like-minded people, of that heart connection between people on all levels, and it's a wonderful thing to see.
Yes. Anyway, I'm certainly glad I went, and it was a wonderful experience, and I hope in time I will have other experiences like it. I'm sure I will, but
I'm sure.
Just for the time being, it's left me with some wonderful memories of meeting some wonderful people. So anyway, I'll have to let you go now.
Well, thank you.
Thank you again for coming onto the programme. It's been very, very nice to talk to you. And possibly we might meet again in the future somewhere.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for inviting me onto the show. I've thoroughly enjoyed talking with you tonight. It's been great fun.
Thank you, Dawn. All the best to you.
Bye-bye.
Cheerio. Well, friends, that was an interesting guest. As you gathered from my conversation, I met Dawn at the conference. She's a very nice lady, a young lady, in fact. And there are many people like her who have dedicated themselves to their light work for this special time. Now, what I want to tell you is next Friday, of course, is the 21st of the 12th, and I'm doing my radio program as usual. And because of the nature of it, because by the time I do my program, the key point, as far as I'm concerned, of the day, which is 11 minutes past 11 a.m., will have passed. So it will be quite an opportunity to talk about my own experiences on that day. So what I've done, I've invited Steve Beckow, who was a speaker at the Sedona conference, to join me. And all being well, if he's available and nothing crops up to take him away, he'll be there to have a chat with me. And what we'll do is just sort of have a more or less informal chat about things. And we'll leave it at that. Now, should anything happen and Steve's unable to come onto the programme, what I will do is I will just have a chat with you myself. I'm sure there'll be plenty to talk about. So, have to say thank you again for being with me today. I'm sure you enjoyed it. And next week should be quite something as well. So I hope you can be with me. God bless you all. Thank you.